And we're live. Hello and welcome to your latest weekly news update, coming to you live and direct for the first time in 2024. Very exciting stuff. Let me say right at the top, first and foremost, thank you for Placent for sponsoring this episode and keeping us coming back week in, week out. They've kept our spirits up with their funky music once again. And I should also say that I'm absolutely thrilled, delighted, beside myself with joy to be joined once again by the OG Weekly News panel. My ride or die is the one and only Jake Evans, managing editor of Next.io, and our good friend, Mr. Nico Jansen. Fellas, Happy New Year. Thank you for joining me. How's it going?
Happy New Year, Connor. It's going brilliantly. I've never had an intro quite like that before. Looking forward to the first pod of 2024, I must say. And I agree, it wouldn't be complete without Nico alongside us.
Exactly. Happy New Year's from my end as well. Yeah, and I kind of like, first of all, the Zen type of music. Yeah, which is literally, you know, paving the way for the three of us taking off and then, you know, being able to join the awesome weekly podcast with the one and only Jake Evans, the only one being pictured in our advert video of the week podcast. So we just need to have another chat with Nico, the real deal Nico. So maybe Connor and me can sneak a little bit of us into that video as well, but you never know.
Yeah, if there's one thing that you should know about me and Nico, it's we love airtime. We're all about getting that spotlight. Bitterly disappointed, of course, that Jake was the only one featured in the video. That's the first I've seen of it. It was also throwback Jake from about 10 years ago, I think. Full head of hair, full beard.
I know, crazy. That blindsided me as well. I've never seen that before. But yeah, it shows how much you age working at an iGaming startup, doesn't it, in just a short space of time.
So this time next year, we'll all have the same haircut, me and Nico. We'll
join the club.
So as our eagle-eyed viewers and regular viewers will know, and speaking of which, iGaming Alliance offers us greetings from North Carolina. Hello to you from London and from wherever Nico is and wherever Jake is. And hello to Elizabeth, our erstwhile producer in the background. But yeah, I think most of our viewers will be expecting and indeed demanding our regular feature by the one and only Nico Jansen. Nico, have you got a 10 in 5 for us this week of the biggest headlines that are hitting the papers this week?
Yes, of course, I have another 10 and 5. But before actually starting, and unfortunately, we're not yet have one of our most beloved guests with Bogdan. First of all, a big thank you for the little video he produced for all of us, and which he has sent, and which put a smile on all of our faces. So thank you once again, Bogdan. I'm pretty sure you will join later on. As soon as you do, you will get another thank you from us. But as said, the video you produced was awesome. Thank you. And now taking off with the 10 and 5, which I will cover some of the 10 topics, of course, in 5 minutes, like always and every time. So the US SEC approves Bitcoin ETF to drive crypto adoption. So the US Securities and Exchange Commission, short SEC, after months of deliberation, has finally approved a Bitcoin ETF. Some of the world's largest asset managers, like BlackRock, Grayscale, have been seeking regulatory approval for a Bitcoin ETF for the last several months. In particular, spot ETFs, which enable an entity to hold an asset such as Bitcoin itself. So we will see how this will or might impact the gaming industry as well. And one interesting fact as well, as the minister president of the MPs expressed concern over new Curaçao gaming law, the future of Curaçao's long-awaited National Ordinance for Games of Chance, short LOK, hangs in the balance after facing a frosty reception in the country's parliament. However, questions have arisen over whether the bill is in a fit stage for passage. Among other matters, this is due to concerns about the robustness of the new regulator established under the bill's text. the Curaçao Gaming Authority, CGA, committed. And they stated, Minister Silvania was in a great hurry, read the editorial. He has already announced the law at home and especially abroad before the law has been introduced, even before it was properly constructed. So maybe we will just see some changes, but for sure there are headwinds in Curaçao. Then, one topic which we will cover from regulator perspective within our discussion as well. Now from the operator perspective, as sportsbook operators begin New York online casino lobbying rush. So the New York gaming market could reach new heights with the inclusion of online casinos. As said, now the operator's view. BetOnNY, a group backed by Sports Betting Alliance, believes that the authorization of online casino gaming in New York could generate up to $1 billion in additional tax revenue annually for the Empire State. An online gaming bill, which could include the both iGaming and iLottery, would also create new employment opportunities and ensure consumer protections while also driving revenue. As said, that's the operator's view, and we will touch down within our nice session on the regulatory and legal view as well. Still staying in New York, as mobile sports betting handle exceeds $2 billion for the third consecutive month. The New York Gaming Commission has reported its mobile sports wagering figures for December 2023, recording $188.3 million in gross gaming revenue, which is based on a handle of more than $2 billion as well. And if you're doing your calculation right, this means that 9% of the handle, of the overall handle, generates the GGR. Then heading over to the UK, as Bet365 posts a 61.2 million loss despite a revenue growth in 2022-23. Bet365 reported a £61.2 million loss during its 2022-23 financial year, despite posting an increase in sports betting and gaming revenue. The loss comes in contrast to a 42.8 profit posted in the previous year. Bet365 put the loss down to an increase in costs across the business during the 52 weeks to 26 March of 2023. Then the Kambi co-founder Christian Nyland is about to step down as CEO. Kambi Group co-founder Christian Nyland has announced his decision to step down as CEO this year once a successor has been identified. Since co-founding Kambi with Anders Ström in 2010, Nyland has been at the helm of the stock-listed sportsbook supplier, and the company has already initiated the search for a new CEO. UK Gambling Commission imposes a £6 million penalty on Gamesys for social responsibility and AML failings. A gambling business will pay a £6 million penalty after the commission investigation revealed social responsibility and anti-money laundering AML findings. And these failures were revealed during a commission compliance assessment in May 2022. Then going over to the finance and M&A side, as Golden Entertainment completes a 213.5 million sale of Nevada operations. So gambling operator Golden Entertainment has completed the sale of its distributed gaming operations in Nevada to an affiliate of J&J Ventures Gaming. J&J Ventures Gaming will pay cash consideration of $213.5 million to acquire the Golden Entertainment operations. MGA is active as well, as they suspended the authorization for Rush Gaming. Rush Gaming has had its gaming license cancelled in Malta by the Malta Gaming Authority, MGA, and the suspension comes less than 3 weeks before the new MGA CEO Charles Messi is due to begin his role. So, quite interesting what's happening there at MGA. And last but not least, IGT ends its legal challenge of national lottery competition. The UK Gambling Commission has informed that IGT PLC has discontinued its legal challenge against the tender process of the fourth national lottery competition. In July 2022, the New York Stock Exchange listed gambling technology group was granted permission by the Court of Appeal to challenge the Gambling Commission's awarding the fourth national lottery tender to Allwyn UK. And now we finally can put a stop on this one as well. And this has been my first 10 and 5. And of course, I covered the 5 minutes.
Thanks, Nico, for that 10 in 10, as we'll call it. That was very nicely done. I think a lot of the time we don't attribute the most exciting period of the year for news to this early stage in January, but as you showed us, there is plenty going on. Hi to John and Alexei in the comments, making some very amusing comments and trying to put us all off and get us into a fit of the giggles, which I slightly took part in a few minutes earlier. Luckily, we have a mute function here and I can sit and giggle in peace. But yes, thanks, Nico, for the update. And we are going to move on, I think, to our main story of the week. We're looking this week at US online gaming, as we so often do, because we have some new analysis from Morgan Stanley about some projections and some analysis of the US market as it currently stands. And they've come out with some pretty interesting figures. So first and foremost, if we can dive straight into this, I think we've got a graph showing the projected market growth over the next few years as per Morgan Stanley estimates. And you can see there the kind of linear growth trajectory that it expects for both sports betting, which are the light yellow bars there, and for iGaming, which are the darker yellow bars. So both of those expected to continue growing right up into 2026. With a compound annual growth rate of around 17%. So Morgan Stanley, of course, is pretty bullish, I would say, on the US online gaming sector. It's said that it represents the single highest growth opportunity of any consumer discretionary sector. So I think that kind of matches up with a lot of what we've been hearing about, you know, the recession-proof nature of iGaming and sports betting, and how, you know, even when customers are tightening their belts, it seems that, you know, sports betting and iGaming growth are here to stay. So thank you, Lorena, for showing us that graphic. So, yeah, we've got kind of growth forecasts going up to, what was it, something like 16 billion in GGR from sports betting and 10 billion from iGaming by 2026. So massive market still to be realized in the US. And I think the two main points that Morgan Stanley made in their latest report was that growth is going to be driven in two different ways. One of those is, of course, new state markets opening up, and we're going to come back to that topic in just a few minutes. But the other one is what they've already noted as an increase in spending levels among US customers. So their expectation is that as more states legalize and begin to mature, spending levels on online sports betting as a percentage of personal consumption expenditure will grow so that they meet and potentially exceed levels in mature markets, it said. And indeed, on a per adult basis, there are numerous states, including some which launched under a year ago, that have already exceeded pre-COVID UK spend per adult, which was about $60 a month, I believe. And the median state is around $70 per adult spend. And I looked it up as well for just to compare that to Australia, which is an interesting market because it's widely regarded as the market that has the biggest gambling spend per capita, as far as I know. And the Australians are spending about $100 a month each on per adult on gambling. So I think it's kind of testament to just how quickly the US markets are kind of coming towards maturity. You know, I think they're sort of growing super, super quickly. And obviously, the popularity of sports betting and iGaming is just growing every day, and that spend level is coming up. So what do we think, guys? Is that going to overtake mature markets, the likes of UK, Italy, and so on? Do you expect to see that continue growing into the future? Do you think it's going to start and level out pretty soon?
I think it's definitely going to overtake those markets. I think that's what these forecasts suggest from Morgan Stanley and from others. I think the interesting part for me of this is obviously that sports betting has kind of completely exploded since 2018, as we know, but the legislative timeline has kind of gone slightly stale on sports betting now. I know we're Morgan Stanley pointed out that kind of North Carolina is going to be the one big major sports betting state in 2024, as it looks like. I think Vermont went live last night as well, which is obviously good if you're one of the three operators live in the state, but as it's kind of 750,000 people, I don't think it's really going to make any kind of meaningful dent. But as Morgan Stanley points out, that means that the narrative is kind of changing now, right, into iGaming and how much iGaming regulation might pick up the slack. Because the one stat that stood out to me, Connor, was that since obviously 2018, when online gambling was legalized, 80% of states have embraced sports betting, while iGaming is still only available in fewer than 20 states. So 20% of states, sorry. So are we going to see the kind of dial move for legislative like proceedings for online casino this year? Doesn't look that positive, but we might see some movement. I think that's the forecast from Morgan Stanley, at least.
Yeah, I think they're bullish on the market generally, but there is a certain conservatism to their estimates. Definitely, they're not expecting miracles, not expecting all states to just turn straight over to iGaming in the next sort of few months. It's obviously going to be a long process. Now, I know Nico, you've got a lot of friends in a lot of different markets, and you're very close to the US market. You talk to a lot of people. What's the feeling on the ground around this? Are people quite optimistic generally, or is it kind of a bit more stunted than that when it comes to iGaming?
So first of all, with the 80%, which Jake has just quoted, this is just based on the overall states, but not based on the GDP represented by the states, because out of the big four states, only one state with New York is online. Florida is kind of online, but just with the Seminole Tribe and Hard Rock Cafe, which is a monopole, while Texas and California are still not yet online. So if we would see, first of all, Florida opening up to other operators as well, and Texas, because there's a ballot going on as well, and California, which has been slapped last year with the ballots being denied, I'm pretty sure if one of these four additional three states would go online, numbers would be way different. In addition, just the state of New York is already outperforming Germany, right? So if we just take into account exceeding 3 months consecutive a handle of 2 billion, this is like 6 billions in just a time span of 3 months. So if we just see a full year of New York craziness, this already outperforms one of the biggest iGaming markets, which we have in Europe with Germany. So as soon as even more markets with iGaming would go online, numbers would be one of its kind, and they are already in the short run for just leading the world. And as already stated so often, it seems like the golden nugget is just based in the US with the overall spending. Connor, you came up with, it's just crazy numbers. And I'm pretty sure we did not even touch the surface with all gaming markets being online, going online, and we don't yet see the overall impact which it might have, especially with the iGaming market of slots and online casinos going online in New York as well. This would change the overall perception and the overall revenues quite significantly as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right to point that out, Nico. And we're going to have a closer look at the kind of legislative forecast in some of those key states a little bit later. But yes, you're right to point that out, because in the Morgan Stanley estimates and forecasts, that doesn't include the potential of Florida, Texas, California. It doesn't include New York iGaming, which remains, however remote, it remains a possibility. And it doesn't include Illinois iGaming either, which is also a kind of a distant but very real possibility still. So you're quite right. There's a whole lot more upside still to come on those projections. But they also, Morgan Stanley kind of gave us some insights into what, how they think that market's going to be made up a little bit as well. So obviously we have this kind of effective duopoly at the moment with DraftKings and FanDuel, and then you have a few smaller players underneath them, the likes of BetMGM, Bet365, and a handful of others. But obviously Morgan Stanley, very interested in share prices and which stocks to keep an eye on, and they identified two US gaming stocks as being their kind of favorites for growth over the next few years, and one of them was DraftKings. They set a target price for DraftKings of $40. Right now those shares trading at about 33, 34, and I think we've got a graph as well, actually a chart showing the DraftKings share price just over the last 5 years, which makes for kind of quite interesting viewing, because I think this $40 target price seems quite conservative, quite sober compared to what we've seen from DraftKings in the past. You can see not long after they listed, the kind of markets went a little bit crazy, and there's this huge mountain of volatility between 2020 and 2022, and obviously I think that the markets were kind of struggling to price the stock at that point. It was all a lot more uncertain and a lot less clear than the view that we have now on the US gaming sector, and I think we're back to a period of much more sensible growth. It all looks a lot more predictable since 2022. You know, that the changes in share price have been a lot steadier and a lot less kind of volatile, certainly. So, go ahead, Jay.
I was just going to say, from an investment view, that makes perfect sense, because in 2018, when DraftKings was riding high, it's kind of like anything was still possible from a legislation perspective. Like any and all states could go all in on betting iGaming, and investors were kind of right to take the plunge. I think, you know, that's still quite an upgrade from Morgan Stanley, you know, $7 or $8 per stock upgrade. And I think they're probably right to be conservative, if that's for 2024. I'm not sure if that was the timeline, but I mean we've touched on sports betting. Like, there's no big opportunity for growth this year really, aside from North Carolina. And then if you look at iGaming as well, where DraftKings is obviously very good. So Morgan Stanley says iGaming, the total addressable market for iGaming is expected to grow 20%, reaching 7.1 billion for 2024, that is. But I think the reason they're being conservative and the reason it's not more bullish is because the regulatory timelines just keep getting pushed back, and we've seen so many states look promising, only for them not to deliver. And they've, you know, in their own projections, they've had to revise the timeline for Maryland's iGaming launch to Q4 of 2024. They've pushed back Indiana to 2025 from 2024. You know, Colorado's been pushed back by another year to 2026 from 2025. So, like you said at the very top, I think you summed it up, that they're bullish, but it comes with caveats because of the slow progress and the fact that there is an obvious kind of ceiling there. as we see the market now.
Yeah, quite right to point that out. But I think despite that, you know, we've had these kind of normalizing markets now. They are actually coming to maturity, it seems, in a really accelerated way. If you look at the age of these regulated markets as compared to some of the markets here in Europe, you know, everything's just happened so much faster, which kind of explains why there was so much money being thrown around as they started to regulate. But Morgan Stanley described DraftKings, it said, was a leader in one of the few idiosyncratic growth stories within the consumer sector over the last few years, and it's poised for a material ramp in profitability in 2024 as fewer new states are launched and as the company refines its national marketing approach. So I think not only is the market approaching maturity, the major players within the market are also kind of starting to normalize that spend, and obviously profitability is a huge concern going forward. So I think that's a pretty reasonable analysis of what's going on at DraftKings. Those costs are going to kind of come down as a percent.
I think you can kind of, you can see why they're a top pick as well. Because even if you look at Vermont last night, for example, DraftKings is one of three operators that was able to go in from day one, because they've already proved that they can get to profitability and they're aiming beyond that. Whereas you've got operators like ESPN Bet, for example, that wasn't able to launch who else was that? Obviously Penn, ESPN Bet, and there was one other major player, BetMGM, for example. They weren't able to launch in Vermont. They were turned down for a license, and it just shows that DraftKings is basically going to be able to launch anywhere that regulates, whereas, you know, some of the competition is going to have to be a little bit more selective about which states they choose to target.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of which, there was some discussion about some of the different brands that might be able to still make a name for themselves in US gaming. And Morgan Stanley pointed out Fanatics, funnily enough, as one of their kind of key brands to watch, as opposed to ESPN Bet, BetMGM. I think that they kind of highlighted Fanatics because of its, they said it had a solid tech stack, which obviously acquired last year in a pretty big deal. And also it's got, you know, a well-known sports brand and all those strengths that we've discussed here so many times. But interestingly, they suggested that the likes of Fanatics will be able to secure additional market share, but without really threatening the dominance of DraftKings and FanDuel. So it said that the market leaders are expected to maintain their positions by leveraging scale advantages to effectively ward off most competitors. And they kind of pointed to some stats about both Fanatics and Bet365, which have been operating in several states for several months and still only captured less than 5% of market share. But I do think that I wonder if we're going to get to a point where instead of having two major brands and then a whole, you know, there's something like 50 brands live across the US at the moment, which seems like way too many when you think about what proportion of the market's actually shared between the remaining 40, 45 brands. But maybe with ESPN Bet and Fanatics kind of coming up to challenge for that sort of tier two position alongside BetMGM, maybe they'll be the three big ones underneath FanDuel and DraftKings moving forward, and then a lot of those other brands, you know, BetRivers and Sugar House Casino and whatever, WinBet, Caesar Sportsbook, maybe they're all going to start to kind of fall away. I don't know. Do you have any predictions about that, you two?
Well, I think Vermont's an interesting one to look at in terms of Fanatics and what they're going to be capable of, because they're going toe-to-toe with just DraftKings and FanDuel now, like for the early stages of the market. It might, yeah, fair enough, they're sort of competing over peanuts in Vermont, but I think in terms of, you know, data that you're able to extrapolate from that, and in terms of their strategy in new states as well, which we haven't really seen a great deal of last year, It will be interesting to see how they compare to obviously the two runaway market leaders, as you've alluded to, Connor.
Yeah. It was interesting. There really wasn't much mention of many of the other brands in the latest Morgan Stanley report. It seemed very focused on those market leaders. And yeah, Fanatics was the challenger brand that they picked out as a potential real potential rival. But again, they kind of suggested that they'll be able to do it without taking away market share from the big boys.
So what we can see, so there are some numbers flying out there. And according to the latest numbers from Iowa, ESPN Bet was able to take a percentage of 6.7% of the overall market. And as said, they usually start fresh, while the big two of DraftKings and FanDuel, they're usually able to convert a significant amount of their existing DFS fan base, user bases, like we've seen in Ontario, where they have been able to convert 65% of their existing user database from a DFS customer to switch over to becoming a punter as well. And this is an advantage which no one else actually has. So that's why they are the market leaders by far, because they can just operate with an app-to-app call. Like, okay, if you are already using our FanDuel or DraftKings daily fantasy sports app, just click here and then open up an account with whatever bonus. They don't even need to increase like or offer like crazy bonus amounts. They just, you know, convert one user by one click to another, to the same app from the same operator, which is a significant advantage no one else actually has.
Yeah, very true, Nico. And we'll see if Fanatics and ESPN are able to use their existing customer databases in the same way. Now, we were going to talk as well a little bit about the legislative roadmaps in some of these key states where we might see new markets opening up. I think, Jake, you gave us a pretty good rundown of that already. So, as you mentioned, North Carolina is expected to launch online sports betting in the middle of this year. Maryland, we're looking at iGaming by Q4, possibly. Indiana, iGaming in 2025. And then Colorado, iGaming has been pushed back right the way to 2026. So certainly, patience is a virtue. It's gonna cost a lot of money, I suppose, to kind of hang on in there and keep building those customer databases until such time as those states launch. So Maryland, New York, and Illinois were kind of put forward by Morgan Stanley as the three key states that they're watching for iGaming legislation. But they did say, we remain skeptical that New York or Illinois could pass iGaming in the next few years. Now,
yeah,
we have got a little bit more detail on that and the latest update from New York. But before we move on to our next story, I think we have a short video message that we'd like to play first. I said it would be short, and it was. Guys, have you packed your suitcases yet for New York City? It's coming up sooner than you think. It's in about 8 weeks' time, 7 or 8 weeks. So you better start getting those suits down to the dry cleaners, guys. Get your shoes shined. Get your dancing shoes on and head over to the Big Apple. Looking forward to that?
Yeah, I am. Hotel and flights are booked, so all good. Will be a lot of fun, and maybe I will join you sitting on Times Square, zipping out of a, you know, kind of plastic bag while being desperately looking for a casino, which might open up, but for sure not this year, hosted by Rock Nation at Times Square. And the year after next year, I will join you going into that casino and win big time.
Excellent. Yes, and Jake, I know you're not much of a, you're not the world's biggest gambler, but you are a big foodie and quite the gourmet, so I'm sure you're looking forward to getting your list of restaurants ready for your visit to New York. Lots to go and explore there. But it's appropriate that we are talking about New York already because we had a new story from that state earlier this week, or was it even today? Jake, why don't you give us the latest on what's happening with Senator Addabbo over in New York?
Certainly. So even though Morgan Stanley remains sceptical that that New York might launch iGaming in the next several years, they have at least taken the first steps by launching a bill to regulate iCasino. This was introduced this week, as you say, Connor, by our friend Senator Joseph Addabbo, who has spoken at our New York events before. So let's have a little look at some of the details from the bill. So this would see New York's gaming tribes, destination casinos, racing casinos, and licensed sports betting operators permitted to offer online casino, including slots and table games. We already know there's obviously a lot of online operators in New York at the moment with sports betting only, which is a very expensive business with that 51% tax rate. So interesting to note, iGaming, the tax rate has been pitched at 30.5%, which is still pretty damn high, but lower than sports betting. And operators interested would have to pay a $2 million one-time license fee to run iGaming. And then there is also this opportunity of a kind of tethered license, which would be available for an additional $10 million. So it's not going to be cheap. And Morgan Stanley isn't particularly confident that the legislation is going to pass. And I think a big part of that is because of what Nico's just been alluding to, that land-based casinos look a lot more likely to come to New York in the not too distant future. And I think the very influential people at those businesses are slightly worried about a kind of cannibalization of revenues. If you suddenly legalize online gaming, then why would anybody bother to visit these multi-billion pound destinations that are set to be built in New York, in different parts of New York? So yeah, interesting developments there. Do you want me to jump into the quotes from Senator Addabbo, or are you going to cover those, Connor?
No, I'll let you cover them in just a minute. But I think that it seems to me that this cannibalization argument is just super, super weak. I don't think it holds water at all. I'd say this online casino and a land-based casino are such different prospects. It seems to me a very reductive way of looking at it is to say, oh, well, you can get a slot on your phone and you can get a slot in a casino, so that's the same thing. It's like, well, it really isn't. It's a very different prospect. And I think, you know, it would do well for New York. I think New York, just as on a kind of assumption, I would say that they could make huge, huge money in the land-based sector from international and national visitors. They've got so many visitors every year. Going to New York from other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And also, you know, a huge population and huge GDP that's there all the time. And perhaps they would contribute to huge revenues in the online space. I mean, that's a kind of artificial division, but I think it kind of would make sense. So I don't think that holds water particularly. I think it's quite a reductive view. I think Joseph Addabbo, there's some really good quotes here. I think he's hit the nail on the head, actually. I don't know if you want to read them out, Jake, or I.
Yeah, I mean, well, he said the same thing as you. He said kind of neighbouring states have proved that, you know, land-based and online casinos can exist alongside each other without any kind of cannibalisation, really. But you can see why it's a kind of, you know, lobbying argument from these businesses that have spent years planning a downtown integrated resort. It's bound to happen. But yeah, he basically said, at a time of fiscal distress for our state, there's obviously a huge budget hole in New York at the moment, we cannot continue to allow hundreds of millions of dollars to be funneled into neighboring states, looking at you, New Jersey, or into the pockets of disreputable companies, particularly when those funds could be used to bolster funding for public schools or worthy services. So disreputable companies there. He's obviously talking about offshore gambling operators, which is another challenge in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. But all the money that's been, you know, it's not like people in New York aren't playing online casino. All it means is they're not paying any tax on it. So I think he's got the argument nailed there. And Nico, as you already pointed out, they're already doing $2 billion a month just in sports betting handle. So obviously mega potential there. It's a story that we will be keeping a keen eye on. And who knows, maybe Morgan Stanley's cynicism and skepticism will be proven wrong in the next year or two.
And what is also quite interesting, talking about cannibalization, so when New York opened up their gates for sports betting, each and everybody thought that the overall revenues, the reported revenues of the neighbor state of New Jersey, which once held the most revenue-driven sports betting kind of area with Fort Lee close to George Washington Bridge, and everybody was expecting the overall revenues of New Jersey taking a dip, which they did not. So this also proves, like, okay, whoever is in New York will spend the money in New York and or offline. And if you can't place your play your slots games online licensed in New York, then you just use a VPN and play online just of a non-licensed entity. And as Senator Joseph Edebu already pointed out, it's if you have two options, option A is not legalize iGaming and, you know, have no taxation income, or B, just legalize it, then have a decent framework and, you know, be happy that taxes are being paid. I'm pretty sure that a lot of politicians from New York would go for option B.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Just to add one small quick caveat to what you're saying, Nico. Revenues do continue to rise in New Jersey, but I've seen a lot of figures showing that handle has been going down, actually. So I think the operators have become more and more efficient and been able to spend a lot less of their revenue on costs. But I think GGR has been going up, but handle been going down. So there may be some element of there must have been some loss to New Jersey from New York legalizing sports betting. But of course, that's what happens. Each state needs to have its own regime.
But not in the range of 35%, which each and everybody was assuming. So, of course, handle might have gone down like 6, 7, 8 or 10%, but for sure not 35%.
Yeah. Okay, well, those were our biggest stories of the week. And I think, seeing as it's our first week back in 2024, perhaps I should put you both on the spot and ask you for your predictions this year. It could be in the US, could be elsewhere. Something you think is going to happen between now and this time in 2025. Have you got anything for me, Nico?
Yeah, so starting with me, first of all, thank you for putting me on the spot. So regarding the things or something we will see in the US, as of now, we did not yet see a big fine in the US like we've seen in the UK, where William Hill was literally forced to pay a fine of roughly 20 million, 17, 18 million pounds. I'm pretty sure in 2024, we will see a big fine hitting one of the big operators in the US as well. There are rumors going around that there are AML failings hitting one of the top three operators in the US already. And I'm pretty sure they don't play around. Just remember when we've seen the downtime of Caesars and MGM in Las Vegas, I'm pretty sure we will see something comparable hitting one of the big operators in the iGaming space as well.
Nice. Good prediction. Jake, what about you? What have you got?
Yeah, so mine's very topical considering what we've just discussed on today's show. I think basically iGaming is going to have barely any legislation. And I think even Morgan Stanley's estimates will be look to be ambitious by the end of the year. And a big reason I say that is because I want to draw your attention to another interesting news story. And that is that the Campaign for Fairer Gambling, who have had so much success in the UK with the campaign to reduce, obviously, fixed odds betting at terminal stakes and to implement a hell of a lot of the stuff, as we've seen as part of the Gambling Act review for online, they are now targeting the US market, which is a really interesting development because their lobbying power in the UK was incredible, and they ended up with two results that they set out to achieve. And they've released their first blog that's kind of going down the same route in the US. And they've commissioned research which suggests that iGaming is actually a net negative to the New Jersey economy. So obviously, like we just said, Senator Addabbo said, you know, we don't want to lose out on tax revenue. We don't want to lose revenue to neighboring states and offshore. And that's very often used as an argument by state legislators to regulate iGaming. But the Campaign for Fairer Gambling has tried to basically turn that on its head. And they're arguing that iGaming is a net negative because it basically costs the state of New Jersey approximately $180 million in lost economic output. It says the point is that alternative forms of recreation deliver far greater economic value. And they've said this is due to iGaming's high margin, low labor nature, which means that the money ending up as wages is less than it is for other industries. They've also said, you know, a large proportion of gambling is reinvested in advertising by operators, which again has a lesser economic impact. And then finally, yes, while operators pay higher taxes than in other types of recreation, these taxes are kind of offset by the fiscal and social costs of treating problem gambling. So really interesting. And we've seen what their influence can do in the UK. And if they want to take aim at iGaming legislation in the US, then I think, yeah, we're not going to see. Maybe that's just another stumbling block, you know, along the route to these bills that have struggled to gain any momentum as it stands.
Yeah. Good prediction, though. And I'll round off with one off the top of my head. I think, and this is a good one because it's going to be like 2 years before you can prove me wrong. I think gambling revenue in the UK will be lower in 2024. Than it was in 2023 by a significant margin. I think it'll be 10% lower or something. And I think the share price of UK listed firms is going to reflect that.
Why? Because of the review or?
No, just saying it.
Okay. So no rationale, just
something to say, isn't it? No, yeah, I think because of the Gambling Act review, yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's been a super tough market for a long time. And I think it's going to get tougher and tougher and tougher. And I think, yeah, firms are going to suffer as a result. That's my prediction, which is a bit vague, I know, but that's what I think.
So just to get some clarification on what you've just proposed, you are meaning and referring to the official revenue. You're not speaking about the black markets, right?
No.
Because we've seen it in other regulated markets, the tighter the regulation becomes, actually, the more revenues are driven into the black markets. So this is something you're stating as well. Like, okay, we will see a downshift in the overall revenues. The overall regulated revenues, right?
Regulated revenues. Exactly, yes. Yes. And maybe we'll follow suit with Germany and 99% of our revenue will go to the black market or whatever the figure is. I don't know. Okay. Well, on that bombshell, I think that's enough. Excuse all my statistical inaccuracies. I can't help it. But all that remains to be said this week is thanks once again to Playson for sponsoring us here at Weekly News. Thanks to everyone for watching and commenting and joining in the conversation. And of course, thank you to Nico and to Jake for joining me here once again.
Have a storming year, everyone. Thanks for storming you.
I'm starting fires through poetry. The heart's out, staying loyal, no falling out. And if you step into the court, be ready, we balling out. Yeah.